Hello, Poke fans. Welcome to the Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast, or Stabcast for short, your twice-monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon. I'm your host, Trainer Spike, and with me, as always, are my fellow trainers Slagkick,
Snorlax,
and Sulker.
I don't come here often, but I'll fight you!
Today is October 16th, 2016, and this is Stabcast Podcast Episode 6, Pokemon Genders. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of our venture into the world of Pokemon. This week, Trainer Slagkick will be leading a discussion on understanding the use of gender in the mainline Pokemon games series. But first, let's talk about our Poke Weeks. Sulker, you want to kick us off?
Sure. This week, I bought a couple of new plushes. I got me a little cute Eevee that is always smiling.
Aww.
And a little Pancham to go along with them, so they're best friends and they hang out all the time. It's super cute.
That sounds adorable.
I also paused playing my Pokemon Blue game because, for whatever reason, I get drawn back to Pokemon Red. It's probably the fact that there are Growlithe only in that version. So I've gone back, and I've already made way more progress than I have in my new run-through of Blue. So, Lavender Town, I'm in you.
Spoopy!
Ooh, holla!
And I think that's pretty much it. I did buy some Pokemon cards at the convention we were at before last episode, which is Gamer X.
Nice.
So I'll probably be posting some of those on our Twitter as we unbox them.
Yeah, fantastic. And what about you, Slaggy? What was your Poke Week like?
My Poke Week lately has been mostly about absorbing the latest Sun and Moon news and just being super hyped for Sun and Moon. As Sulker mentioned, we were at the GX4 conference, and there was a lot of great Poke cosplay that I was totally digging. So I would say that kind of applies to the Poke Week as well.
Indeed, indeed. Anything else?
Not really. Really, I've been feeling like I want to pick back up with my Pokemon Yellow game, but then I'm like, Sun and Moon are so close, and I've gotten so used to the, like, quality of life changes that the later generations have brought. So I'm like, do I wanna, or do I just wanna wait and save my Poke hype for Sun and Moon?
Yeah,
it's,
you know,
coming fast.
I must confess, I'm right there with you on that one.
You must confess, my loneliness is killing me now.
Girl. So, yeah, I'm in a similar boat there with regard to, you know, I would like to replay the older games, but going back is so tough.
Yeah, but with the whole we can transfer Pokemon from Red and Blue / Yellow to Sun and Moon, I'm really excited for that. I think bringing some of my babies along for the future trips are gonna be, you know, like, it's a nice little vacation for them.
Aww.
A little vacation.
It warms my heart to hear you call them your little babies. My Poke Week has been actually a pretty quiet one. I started playing one of the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games I picked up a couple months ago, but then the new Dragon Quest came out, and it was like, okay, well, LOL, bye.
And then PSVR came out, and then you had to be Meowth all Friday night.
Oh, yeah, with cat lateral damage. So, you know, it's been a light Poke Week for me, but especially as we ramp up now to where we're starting to get our first images of some of the Sun and Moon merch, it's clear, you know, I'm going to be deep in the thick of Pokemon again in the next month, so very much looking forward to that. Anyway, with all of that in mind, let's start talking about our Muse, or Poke News. Sulker, I think you have our first story today.
I sure do. Pokemon TCG announces their Alola collection to be released in November. So the first English Sun and Moon TCG products will be hitting the shelves November 18th, and it's aptly named the Alola Collection. There are two versions of the Alola Collection, one for Solagio and one for Lunala. Each containing a jumbo Pokemon GX card, sculpted figures, and collector's pins featuring these two legendary Pokemon. It will also come with 5 booster packs and a online code for the Pokemon the Card Game Online, which will give the owner a foil promo card for Rowlet, Litten, and Poplipo.
Yes!
Yes!
These promos are likely to be the same ones released in Pikachu and New Friends blister packs, which release in Japan on the same day.
Yeah, I'm really excited. The Pikachu and New Friends cards, we don't know what the actual card stats are going to be yet, but the art for them, even though it's just like the basic Sun and Moon art for the starters, it just looks so cute to see all of our three new friends on cards. I'm really excited for this.
I'm really hoping that there's going to be some very nice Professor Kukui art, and all I'm saying is I'm going to need a protective card sleeve for that.
Ew, you're disgusting. Let's see.
You are the muck of people, just so you know.
You know what muck spelled backwards is?
Disgusting. Shameful.
Alolan Muk. Alolan Muk.
So we have our first Sun and Moon card set English news as well. The card set is going to be Sun and Moon, and it will feature three theme decks rather than the usual two. This is going to be Forest Shadow, Roaring Heat, and Bright Tide. Early word indicates that these decks are going to focus on Rowlet, Litten, and Popplio rather than their evolutions, which is more common. These sets are expected to release in February in North America.
Also coming in February, in fact on February 3rd, for a retail price of $15.99 is the Zygarde Complete Collection Pin Box. It'll include a foil promo card with Zygarde Complete Form, a collector's pin featuring Zygarde Complete Form, three booster packs, and a Pokemon Trading Card Game online code card.
Awesome, that's
yeah,
exciting.
Yeah, you know, a Zygarde definitely having a huge, or seemingly huge, involvement in Sun and Moon, you know, probably gonna have some sort of story element in there, so.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who think that Zygarde and Hoopa are gonna figure heavily into like the deep lore of the next generation.
Oh my
so I'm
God,
really
are they gonna,
excited
like,
here.
Are they gonna like fuse into like Zygarde Hoopa?
I don't think we have any idea yet, but
is Zygarde like it so he's gonna put a Hoopa on it?
I literally have no response to that. Sulker, what do you have for me?
Charizard, Gyarados, Machamp, and Mewtwo are the featured promo cards that fans will receive for playing in the Evolutions pre-release tournaments. These tournaments will be taking place October 22nd to the 30th in the 2 weeks before the set is released in stores. To find a pre-release tournament near you, you can go to the event locator on Pokemon.com. Each participant will receive a pre-release box containing 22-card evolution packs and 4 10-card booster packs.
As well as an exclusive foil promo card.
Hey!
Really not a whole lot else to say on it. Tournament organizers may award 3 additional booster packs to all players or may give them all to the top finishers. So, if you're interested in playing the card game, I would recommend you get on Pokemon.com right now and figure out where the nearest location is near you.
Maybe we should do that.
Awesome. Yeah, we should talk about that.
We'll be like the oldest people there by like 3 times the age.
I find it hilarious that you think that we are the oldest Pokemon fans.
I think that Sulker has a point here.
It's 2016. That narrative has totally changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. We also have word here that the third Break Evolution card box will be releasing in January. This is going to be the box that has Arcanine Break, Crobat Break, and Mandibuzz Break. As the star attraction, Arcanine Break is the one that will be additionally featured as a jumbo foil card.
Yes!
Wait, no Malamar Break?
The box will also come with 5 booster packs and a Pokemon Trading Card Game Online code card. Please look forward to it.
Okay, as an Arcanine super fan, I'm really excited for this set, so look forward to more squealing from me as it comes out.
Yes. And I think this next news story is one of yours, too.
Oh my. It sure is. I don't know what that voice was. Ignore it.
Malamar!
Pokemon fans can now obtain Caldeo during this month's Mythical Pokemon Giveaway. So in order to get this level 100 Caldeo, you'll need a copy of Pokemon X, Y, well not both, or Omega Ruby or Alpha Sapphire.
Or if you're us, all of those.
Yeah, there is that.
It's funny because it's true.
So this level 100 Caldeo will come with the ability Justified, and will know the 4 moves Aqua Jet, Leer, Double Kick, and Bubble Beam. This giveaway is available from October 1st until October 24th.
So, something very exciting is that the Pokemon Sun and Moon special demo is launching on October 18th. So
right around the time you're hearing this episode.
Yeah, we'll be downloading it from the 3DS eShop. I can't wait. I love that they've, you know, had these demo versions that let you kind of bring stuff over. In this case,
well,
it's going to be
and
the
in this
Ash
case,
Greninja, right?
Yeah, in this case, I think this is like the biggest, best promo they've run yet. Ash Greninja as a bonus for playing through the special demo version. That's way better than what, like 20 potions or whatever nonsense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I'm excited that they're going to include the special mechanic Ash Greninja fails to any fire type.
Shade.
Yeah, I really love that these demos are like uniquely crafted experiences. You know, they could have just done like the first town or whatever, but you know, I love that they do something different and reward you for investing the time. And all I can say is I hope there's plenty of Professor Kukui.
Excellent. We also have word here of the next set of Alolan Pokemon plushies.
They're just so beautiful. I want them.
Right? These three are Alolan forms of Raichu, Vulpix, and Meowth.
Whoa. And he's so sassy and gay.
I want one so bad.
I want them all.
These are going to be arriving in Japanese Pokemon centers starting February 2017. Details of a Western release haven't been revealed yet, but we all know they're coming, and I'm really glad that these are going to be the first three because I need that Meowth so bad.
Yeah, Sun and Moon merch is going to be dangerous for me.
Same.
And this week we got a preview at the evolutions that we'll be seeing in Pokemon Sun and Moon. So I'm sure most of you Pokemaniacs out there are aware, but we're going to cover them very briefly so that you can get an idea of what's going on. We've discovered that Type Null does indeed have an evolution into Silvally. Silvally's looks a little more put together than its predecessor, and we learned one really important thing about it that I think we speculated about here on the show last time, that Type Null slash Silvally would have some sort of Arceus-like ability to change its type, which we have now received confirmation that this Pokemon will change its type dependent upon the item it's holding.
That's crazy.
Now, you know what's crazy is that, like, there was not even any, like, speculation about this. We're just that Poke-nerdy that we were like, oh, well, the name Type Null seems to hint that there will be something to do with the Pokemon types. That's how deep into this we are. They tried to make us go to Poke Rehab, but we said no, no, no.
I literally don't know what words are coming out of your mouth right now. So, Sulker?
Jang Mo-O now has a second stage evolution of Haka Mo-O. This bulletproof dragon is obviously the second stage in this evolution chain. And it looks like it has a secret passion and that it just wants to dance. It just wants to put all of its stuff in the middle of a group of girls. And it just wants to dance. It just wants to forget about guys. It just wants to dance.
Who doesn't?
Well, probably its final evolution, Komo-O, which I assume is somehow based off of, like, a Komodo dragon.
Or Kokomo.
I think that's unlikely.
Very much so. This dragon fighting type is the final evolution stage, and I think it looks badass, to be honest. It can actually use its scales to create a sonic attack, from what I saw during the demo.
Gotta go fast.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Gotta go fast. I'm sorry. I need to be, like, Officer Jenny needs to come put me in jail.
R.I.P. Slagkick. Here lies his fettered corpse. Ryombi is the second evolution of Cutiefly. Cutiefly, not Beautyfly. Why was I? Whatever.
I don't know, but it's so cute.
It is a pretty little adorable fly bee thing that takes two of the most awkward animals in creation and puts them into one beautiful little bug. Looks like it's wearing a scarf, and
so cute.
I think it's ready for fall fashion.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Bone Sweet now has a second and third stage of evolution. So this second stage of evolution of this sentient piece of fruit.
Wait, are you talking about me?
I said sentient.
Oh, ho, 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 ho.
One interesting little tidbit about this Pokemon is it no longer has to be feared being stabbed by other Pokemon as its head calcifies enough so that it's not a soft little fruity anymore.
Okay, that's not me because I do have to fear being stabbed by Sulker.
As you should.
The final stage is Zarina.
Yes.
And I'm basically going to get one and call it Katya because...
I was just going to make that joke.
Because it is serving me all of the Russian plant dreams that I've ever had, which is a surprising amount. So it's putting it in the same order as, like, Gardevoir, Rosalia, and Lope Bunny.
Lady Bunny?
It has its ability called Queenly Majesty. And its attacks are all elegant high kicks. So watch out for this queen to come stomping down your DS this fall. We did get a couple of new Alolan forms. And I just want to say the garbage pile is hot and heavy in this one.
Wait, you called for me?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. So Alolan Grimer looks like a greenish yellow version of the original Pokemon. The reason for its new coloring scheme, as described by the in-game lore, is that it... So there was a lot of trash basically ending up in Alola. Yes, Slagkick, I am talking about you.
I had to go for Kukui.
And as a result, they had to bring in these Grimers to help with the pollution problem. So as they continued to eat up the garbage, they took on a different form.
Oh, they're the solution to pollution.
And as no surprise to anyone, it has a Alolan evolution in Alolan Muk, who looks like what did you say the internet was calling its sidekick?
Like a rainbow diamond encrusted garbage heap.
Yeah, that. So that's what it is.
Is your aesthetic. So that's fair.
What I really like about it is the in-game animation where it looks like it's basically a lava lamp.
Yes.
So I think that it's gonna be interesting to find new uses for Muk or whatever it spells backwards. On to our next story.
I just have to say, the new Grimer and Muk are poison dark type, which I think is a really great type combination. And, like, I mean, what I love about these Alolan forms is that, you know, Pokemon that maybe wouldn't be traditionally used as much, like, poison and dark's actually really great. And I would probably never have had a Muk on my team before, but, like, I really like Alolan Muk a lot. Like, I have a pretty high chance of going out and, you know, training one. I mean, obviously, you got to catch them all, but...
Wait. I mean, it makes sense that you would never have had a Muk on your team. You're the trainer.
Now, see, that's funny because I was just going to ask if when he catches one, if he's just going to name it at Slagkick.
At this point, yes.
All right. Well, your news story is next. Thank you for being a good sport, buddy.
If you are a fan of Pokemon Diamond Pearl, the anime... Or you've always wanted to watch it, or you didn't know you wanted to watch it, but now you do, you can watch it on Xfinity On Demand.
That's great. So it's easy to get DP now?
Well, maybe for you, you big...
I'm sorry, what were you going to say to him? Well, no, go ahead.
Malamar!
And last, but certainly not least, well, maybe least, we have word of the new character being added to Pokken Tournament in the arcade in Japan. This is going to be Skyzor.
Seizor.
I always called it Skyzor, so I don't even care.
But it's like a pair of scissors. Seizor.
I recognize that you're right, and yet,
I always said
Skyzor.
I always said Scizor, like Scyther and Scizor. Scizor.
You know, something really interesting here that Destructoid, who we'll link you to over at stabcast.org, is that our website?
It is.
Yeah, I think we also use stabcast.org as our Twitter, our Tumblr, our Facebook.
So, you know, there have been a lot of leaks over the last several months that have pointed toward Darkrai, Skyzor, and Empoleon being added to the game. We now have two of those three, so quite a few people are speculating that we may next have an adorable big penguin to hug and fight.
Aww. Okay, if the penguin comes to town, you know I'm going to play that game again.
Didn't Piplup initially have a lot of Popplio hate?
Popplio
style hate. Yeah, that's so interesting.
I mean,
because I always thought Piplup was so cute.
Water Pokemon get all the hate.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know why.
They're the best. Squirtle, Popplio,
Totodile.
Squirtle. I already said Squirtle.
Mudkip.
Yeah, no, they're
the cutest. I said Totodile.
I mean, I don't know about all that.
I heard you like Mudkips.
Anyway, Slaggy, I think it's time for you to get this discussion going. You want to talk about gender?
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing about Popplio is that Popplio is kind of the reason that we wanted to have this discussion. You might have seen the backlash to Popplio's second evolution form, Brionne, about looking too feminine. So... you know, we were kind of talking behind the scenes about, like, you know, what is it that makes a Pokemon feminine or masculine? And then just kind of, you know, that led us to thinking about the whole concept of gender in Pokemon in the first place. So it's kind of covering in two ways. We wanted to talk about the mechanics of gender in Pokemon and how that kind of influences the gameplay, and also the idea of Pokemon gender expression. Now, first, a little bit of a note. Just to be clear, technically, the word gender refers to the attitudes, feelings, and behaviors that a given culture associates with a person's biological sex. Behavior that is compatible with cultural expectations is referred to as gender normative, and behaviors that are viewed as incompatible with these expectations constitute gender nonconformity. This is the definition from the American Psychological Association as of 2012. And so I just wanted to be very clear, especially, you know, just coming back from the GamerX convention. A lot of times, people who maybe aren't as familiar with gender issues, or, you know, just the concept of gender in general, conflate gender and biological sex to be the same thing. Now, when we're talking about Pokemon's gender, in as far as the mechanic in the game, that's technically referring to the biological sex. And in fact, that mechanic is actually called sex in Japan, but I mean, I guess you could probably make some assumptions why they changed it to gender as far as a mechanic
sex.
Term. I mean, despite the fact that, you know, the Pokemon Breeding Center is, you know.
Okay, one, it's a daycare center, so it's not about breeding.
I mean, oh, but it is. But it is, partially. So, you know, that's funny because that will come up in our discussion here. So, I wanted to start out with a look at just the way that the idea of gender in Pokemon developed as a mechanic. So, you know, in Generation 1, I couldn't find any sort of indication that they had initially planned gender being a mechanic during Generation 1, but keep in mind that Generation 1 started development back in, like, 1991, and so...
We didn't know everything about gender back then that we do today.
Well, that's true, but...
I mean, we were all basically just the same-sex androids, right?
You know, we do know for a fact that by 1997, if not earlier than that, Generation 2 was already well under development. We'd already seen, you know, some early footage or shots of Generation 2, which would be Gold and Silver. So, you know, but for all intents and purposes, gender did not exist as a mechanic in the first set of games, Red, Blue, Green, Yellow. And the only exception to this was Nidoran, because there's Nidoran female and Nidoran male. And for the purposes of the game, these were considered as, you know, two different evolution lines. So, like, two completely different sets of Pokemon. You know, there would be, like, Squirtle, Bulbasaur, Rattata, and then Nidoran male, Nidoran female. So, it's kind of interesting to think about that, you know, if Nidoran had been a Pokemon introduced in more modern games, or even in Generation 2, maybe we wouldn't have had Nidoran male, Nidoran female, so...
I think we would have, just not in the form that we currently have them, as in, like, we would still get that dual evolution chain, but I think that they would just come from Nidoran.
Nidoran. And there's been a lot of ways that, you know, gender has come to influence the evolution chains, as we will talk about. So, something that I always think is kind of funny is that, you know, so like I said, I don't know for a fact if there was already thoughts about, you know, the gender mechanics in the first games, if they had wanted to include it or whatever, but I could probably wager to guess that the localization team, at least for, you know, English language localization, wasn't really thinking, because they named Mr. Mime Mr. Mime, and so, you know, that kind of was a little bit weird when we found out that there could be female Mr. Mimes, just because of that, you know, gender pronoun. And, like, also things like Sea King, you know, could be male and female as well. So, it's just kind of interesting to think about, like, oh, you know, that wasn't even a consideration. And also kind of, like, as we're going to talk about later, the idea of Pokemon having a certain gender expression and being like, oh, that's a he, that's a she, you know? So
that makes me wish that I had a Sea Queen.
Yeah, Sea Queen.
Yeah, I'd be super into that.
Yes, ugly glam butch drag. So, Generation 2, Gold, Silver, and of course Crystal, was the generation that introduced gender, and this was meant as a mechanic to allow breeding. Now, as Sulker was saying, the daycare center did exist in the first generation, where you could, you know, raise your Pokemon's levels, and that still was the case in this new daycare center, but also, I mean, that's the reason why I called it the breeding centers, because ever since Generation 2, I've really thought of, you know, daycare centers more as a place for Pokemon breeding, and I mean, you even see, I think, Dorkly or College Humor, one of those sites, did a video about Pokemon breeding with dittos and stuff. So, I mean, it's kind of become a meme about what the daycare center's for. So, this meant that Pokemon were either male, female, or genderless, but genderless was really meant for most part for purposes of not being allowed to breed, which usually meant, like, for mostly legendaries, and that does not imply that the Pokemon is agender or having no sort of gender identity. And so, something that was really interesting about the gender mechanic is that it was partially determined by the attack IV. And so that attack IV also, you know, had a part in determining whether a Pokemon was shiny in Generation 2. So if you had a Pokemon with a gender ratio of 7 male to 1 female, or in other words, an 87.5% chance of being male, there could not be a female that was shiny. So that's kind of interesting, like an unintended effect that was later fixed in Generation 3.
See, I would have liked to, well, not liked to, I was going to make like an inappropriate gender joke about women, and I think that given everything that this episode is representing, that I obviously wouldn't do that. So, yeah, I just wanted to make that comment because I think that it's disgusting that they basically made female Pokemon inferior in this game.
Yeah, and as far as I know, it was just an unintended glitch based on the way that both of these mechanics were calculated, but that is kind of unfortunate because, I mean, I loved having, like, in particular, my starter for Silver was Chikorita, and I would have loved a shiny female Chikorita because I, you know, and it's funny, like, I thought of Chikorita as being feminine, you know, back then. I was like, oh, I want my little curly Chika Chika, yeah.
To be fair, the name does kind of suggest
that. That's
true,
and there's, you know, that is something that we're going to talk about in a little bit. So, you know, the other thing that the gender mechanic allowed was for status moves. There's not that many, but attract is the main one. And, you know, attract, of course, means that if your Pokemon is opposite gender of the Pokemon using attract, has a chance to be incapacitated in battle, which is kind of heteronormative, if you ask me. I always wanted, like, a gay Pokemon that would, maybe, like, that was the ability was gay.
Like, see, I think a better use of it would be, like, say if it was, like, a genderless Pokemon, like Ditto. If somehow you could teach it attract, it should apply to any gender. Or,
yeah,
like, maybe just depending on the Pokemon's, like, personality type, it affects male or female.
So, Slidekick, what you're telling me is that you're hoping for a same type attract bonus?
Ah! Well done! Props to you, mama. So, Generation 2, this was a big deal back in the day. When you two first played Gold and Silver, like, how did you, like, what was your reaction to Pokemon gender being introduced?
I literally ignored it. Like, gender was not something that it still doesn't matter to me a whole ton. Like, some people get super caught up on it. I don't.
See, I don't know that I ever, like, made any team decisions based on gender, but it was always like, ooh, okay, I caught this Pikachu. Oh, it's a girl. It's so cute. I love her. Or, oh, I caught this Growlithe. It's a boy. I love him.
Aw. So, did you name, like, your Pikachu, like, Piketta or whatever, or?
No, I probably went with some, like, anime-based electric character. I probably just named it Pikachu.
Anime-based electric character. That's Pikachu. It's Pikachu. Fuck. So, anyway, in Generation 3, the mechanic of gender was changed so that there wasn't the issue of some female Pokemon not being able to be shiny. I tried to look for, like, if there was a certain calculation, because, I mean, you look at Pokemon theory crafting and all that sort of thing, and a lot of these, most of these formulas for, like, damage, etc., have all been figured out. I could not find one for the way that gender is determined now, but we do know that it's not based on the attack IV anymore. And, you know, something that was interesting about the attack IV is that females took the lower range. That meant if you wanted a female Pokemon with a, like, you wouldn't have a female Pokemon with a higher attack IV, from what I understand. So that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Generation 4 is where the latest big change was, and that's when gender differences in Pokemon appearance came, and that's kind of similar to the real-world idea of sexual dimorphism in animals, where you'll see, like, male and female animals having different patterns, different features. One of my favorite examples is that female Pikachu have a heart shape at the end of their tails. A lot of them, it's just that Pokemon may have larger or smaller features, such as antenna, wings, feathers, different sorts of extra markings. And so that's something that, for the most part, is kind of subtle, but there are some Pokemon that are kind of cool in terms of their gender differences. And that was really starting with Generation 5. So, like I was saying, up until Generation 5, for the most part, like, there were very subtle changes that most people maybe didn't even notice. But in Generation 5, there were three notable Pokemon that had very strikingly different gender appearances. The first one was Unpheasant, where the male has a pink mask with long extensions, and the female has a curved feather on the back of her head. The male has a green underside, and the female has a brown underside. And the other ones were Frillish and Jellicent, which were, you know, an evolution line. They're kind of little jellyfish. And the male is blue, frowning, and has a ruffled collar.
Basically me.
Smooth diamond pattern tentacles and one upper eyelash per eye.
Basically me.
And the female is pink, smiles, and has a bulbous collar, frilled tentacles, and one lower eyelash per eye. That's me.
Basically you.
The males have a star-shaped head pattern and a stiff crown, while females have a flower-shaped pattern and a limp crown.
Still basically you.
Yeah. And then this kind of carried over to to Jellicent. The female has larger eyes with two eyelashes. The male kind of looks like he has a mustache. It's actually really cute.
Yeah, I like that one.
So Frillish and Jellicent, really, you could tell the difference between the genders. In Generation 6, there were also two more notable Pokemon. The first one being Pyroar, where the male has a large mane, and it's actually shaped like the kanji for big or great, which is interesting. And, you know, has a stockier body, and the front legs are half brown. The female has a long, flowing mane, which is more like a ponytail, and mostly brown legs. And the male's tail has a split. And then, one that I'm sure that trainer Spike really loves is Meowstic, which, you know...
Yes!
For obvious reasons. So, I think Meowstic is actually one of the really coolest ones, because, first of all, the appearance is different. The male Meowstics are mostly blue with white highlights, and it's the inverse for females that are mostly white with blue highlights. Male's eyes are green and light blue, and females are red and yellow. And what's really, really cool is that the male Meowstics learn different moves than the female Meowstics. The male Meowstics learn more status moves, and the female Meowstics learn more attack moves. And they even have different hidden abilities. Males have Prankster, and females have Competitive. So I thought that was really pretty cool. Do either of you two have any favorite Pokemon gender differences in terms of their appearance?
I mean, of all Pokemon?
Yeah, like not just the one, like the Meowstics and
Pheasants. Pikachu has a little heart tail, right?
Right. I mean, that's
a big one for me.
Sulker, how about you? Do you have any favorites?
Honestly, I tend to not even pay attention to the differences. So no. But I mean, heart tail Pikachu is pretty awesome.
Oh yeah, super cute. And it'll be interesting to see the differences in Alola, because I mean, all we've really seen, as far as I can tell, we haven't really seen any big gender differences yet, as far as I can tell, right?
Yeah, I don't think we know of any yet, but I'm, you know, certainly hoping that they do continue down that route. I like when it's little cute details like the heart-shaped tail or whatever. I just feel like it gives them more personality, and for collectors, gives us more reasons to focus on, you know, collecting one of each.
And I mean, I agree, and I think that's also really cool when they make big differences. Like, I think that's really awesome. Now, something else that also is interesting to consider is that there's some evolutions of Pokemon that are based on gender.
Oh, yeah?
So, one of the first times we saw this was with Kirlia, who we're used to evolving into Gardevoir, and either gender can become a Gardevoir, but with a Dawnstone, the male Kirlia can evolve into Gallade, which is psychic fighting. Similarly, a Snorunt of either gender can become a Glalie, but a female with a Dawnstone become a Frostlass. Burmy males evolve into Mothim, female Burmese evolve into Wormadam, and Komi can only evolve into Vespiquen when female. And female Komis are harder to find, so I remember, like, anytime I want a Vespiquen, I've always, you know, had to grind for a female Komi to pop up. So it's kind of funny, you know, how you were saying that you didn't really care about what gender the Pokemon was, but, you know, when there's cases like going after certain evolutions, like a Gallade or a Vespiquen, it definitely kind of incentivizes collecting different types, especially with Burmy, where it can become a Mothim or a Wormadam. So I think that's really cool. And again, I hope that we see more examples of that in Sun and Moon.
And I think we will, especially with those little Dancer Bird ones.
I love the little Dancer Bird, and I was thinking
Dancer
about...
Dancer Bird!
Because I was like, I almost feel like the... and when we talk about gender expression and like kind of the what makes Pokemon feminine or masculine, like I kind of always refer to that bird as her. I'm like, oh, she's so cute. But I mean, we haven't had any indication that Pokemon's female only.
We should probably go back and look at the video they were announced in and see if we can identify like what their gender was listed as.
Yeah. I like off the top of my head, I don't feel like it was ever stated. But I mean, again, I think of it as like, oh, she's a little cheerleader. How cute, you know? So I mean, and me as a, you know, member of the LGBT community, I should be ashamed of that, being like, oh, that little cheerleader, she's so cute. I can be like, yes, my little cheerleader birdie boy, he's so cute. So I really quickly, before we talked about, you know, this whole idea of Popplio being too feminine, making her like too girly, making the Pokemon too girly, whether being male or female, I wanted to very briefly talk about Pokemon that are exclusively male and female, because there's really not that many. We have males, of course, Nidoran, Nidorino, Nidoking, and Hitmonlee and Hitmonchan. Then there's also Tauros, which is kind of obvious, Hitmontop, Volbeat, Mothim, Gallade, Throwin' Slock, Rufflet, and Braviary. And then also ones that can't breed are Tyrogue, Latios, who's the only gendered legendary that I can think of, aside from Latias, Tornadus, Thundurus, and Landorus. Females are Nidoran and Nidoqueen, and Nidorina, Nidoqueen. Of course, there's Chansey in Kangaskhan, Jinx, Miltank, again, which kind of makes sense when you think of Tauros, Blissey, Illumise, Wurmadam, Vespiquen, Frostlass, Petlil and Lilligant, Vullaby and Mandibuzz, and then Flabébé, Floette, and Florges, as well as Smoochum, which is a baby, so can't breed, Happening, the same, Latias and Cresselia, and the cosplay Pikachu is specifically female only. As far as genderless, like I said, usually has to do with either a legendary or one that just kind of is like a Magneton, Voltorb, Electrode, Clank, Clink sort of thing. Cling, clang. You know, where they're kind of like magnets or stuff.
So like non-organics.
Yeah, but a lot of these can breed with a Ditto. The only things that can't are pretty much legendaries.
Ditto. Interestingly, the slut Pokemon.
I mean, I like to think of Manaphy as a legendary a lot, but, you know, like, I think it's Manaphy has to breed with, or Fionn has to breed with Ditto to get a Manaphy, or the other way around. I always mix it up. So for the most part, gender is, like, you know, kind of prevalent for most Pokemon. And this leads us to the point of, you know, this whole controversy, which, I mean, I don't really know how much of a real controversy it is, but some people on the internet being upset about, oh, Brionne looks too feminine. So that made me want to talk about what defines Pokemon's gender expression. And, you know, the idea of gender expression being, you know, how we present ourselves based on cultural gender norms. And, you know, I'm sure that there's marketing studies within the Pokemon company that have to do with which Pokemon appeal to boys and girls in terms of, like, you know, a marketing sense for sales purposes. But I think the whole idea of whether a Pokemon appears masculine or feminine is really kind of subjective to individuals and also influenced on our cultural gender norms. Like, for example, the idea of what's masculine in Japan is not the same as what's masculine over here. You see that kind of played up for laughs when we have, you know, like, really muscular, beefy characters. That's not considered manly in Japan. When, you know, you take that to a Choaniki place where it's, like, you know, really mocked. Or the hard gay sort of trope. So, some things I was thinking about, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, Sulker and Spike. Something I noticed about the male-only Pokemon is that a lot of them that are exclusively male are fighting types, kind of like martial artists. And the female-only Pokemons kind of seem to be more normal and fairy types. So, like, this whole idea of, oh, a fighter is masculine and fairy is feminine. And so, I mean, I don't know if there was any intention in that, but I mean,
I absolutely think there's intention there, unfortunately.
What do you think, Sulker?
I mean, I can see where they would come at it from that angle. I mean, based on where the games originate, which is unfortunate. And I feel like it's a larger social issue that we have to look at worldwide as opposed to just how it relates to the Pokemon games. I mean, I'm obviously not a fan of it. I think that fairy types are badass, and I think that they should kick all the ass, and they do. Like, what takes down a dragon better than a fairy? Okay, an ice queen. But yeah, still an ice queen.
Yeah, and I mean, like, to be fair, most fairy types are male or female. You know, Flabébé being kind of the notable one. So, but that's true. I mean, like, like I said, I can't personally speak for the Japanese cultural experience in terms of gender, but I mean, I've consumed a lot of Japanese media in the form of anime and manga and video games, you know, so I mean, you do see this whole, you know, kind of like, oh, cutesy thing, you know, marketed to girls. So something else I also noticed was that humanoid type Pokemon, you know, kind of have a idea of being feminine or masculine with their appearance, you know, definitely tying into the Hitmon family as well. But, I mean, I think of someone like Jinx, who's kind of coded feminine because even though it's apparently part of their body, which is kind of gross to think about, you know, Jinx is wearing a dress, has long flowing hair and big lips. So, you know, there's this idea of, like, if a Pokemon has a flowing dress or, like, flowing and flowery kind of appearance, that makes it feminine. And then anything that's, like, you know, I mean, Hitmonchan has boxing gloves. It's manly, you know? So, I mean, I definitely see that with the human humanoid type Pokemon, but I also feel like even when you look at the type of Pokemon that in-game trainers have, and they're like, I like to collect cute Pokemon, or my Pokemon are tough, they're gonna beat you up. Like, you, when you think of, like, tough or for boys, you might think of something like Gyarados, which has, you know, kind of a very ferocious look, and then a Jigglypuff might be kind of more of a cute, girly type Pokemon, and just, you know, the idea of, like, something with spikes or horns or any sort of aggressive designs being more masculine Pokemon, and, like, a soft, elegant design being feminine. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that, like, okay, with the example of, say, like, the Machamps of the world, like, we know that those can both be male or female, and they're just, like, these giant, bulging muscle characters with forearms that punch the shit out of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's, like, I agree with you in that there is some typing towards, like, oh, these are what male characters look like, but I'm happy that they do keep in the genders like that, where it's,
yeah,
like,
for the most part, for sure.
For the most part, sure. And I know that the female specific versions are troubling at best, but
yeah,
I just really hope that they, moving forward after this generation, look a little bit more at, like, keeping some more gender fluidity going, because, like, and I think they're trying that with Brionne. I think that having a Pokemon that looks effeminate when it is either male or female will help me identify with, like, how it connects to our particular LGBT community.
Yeah. Spike, do you have any thoughts about that? Also, the idea that, like, you know, blue Pokemon are for boys, pink Pokemon are for girls, LOL. I mean, you see that with Frillish and Jellicent, definitely.
Well, you know, I just think that a lot of the gender norm type expectations that we see expressed in these Pokemon, you know, I think it's really rooted in Japanese culture and society for things to be presented in media that way, you know, similar to what we saw in other Japanese-made video games, stuff like Persona 4, where, you know, there are literally entire storylines throughout that game about, you know, characters who do knitting for fun being seen in school as, you know, girlish and questioning their gender and sexual identities.
Right.
So, you know, I don't really have anything to add beyond what you guys have said already, other than Pokemon is far from the only series that falls into this sort of, as you say, blue is boy, pink is girl, sort of binary thinking.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this whole thing about Brionne is that Brionne is a sea lion. So, I mean, sea lions can be male or female, but, you know, Brionne has a frilly little...
super cute.
A frilly little dress, and appears to be wearing eyeliner, and this is a pop star Pokemon, so automatically that makes it feminine.
And, I mean, it's a performer. It clearly looks like it belongs in a circus, and I don't mean
right.
that in, like, a, oh, it's a freak kind of way.
I've definitely thought of Popplio as also a circus-type Pokemon.
Yeah, and so I think going down that route, it makes sense that it wants to look a little more spectacular than not.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting, and I certainly am just sort of speaking based on my reading rather than necessarily something I've seen called out specifically, but particularly in Japan, with, you know, sort of origins of kabuki theater and what have you, for performers to dress in an androgynous or even distinctly feminine way actually has no bearing at all on their actual gender identity.
Do we have any kabuki Pokemon? Sorry to sidetrack.
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, that would be a great design.
I know, but I'd like to interject. So I did look back at the video for where they announced Oricoro, and the only one we've seen so far, as far as, like, where they've included the gender, is female.
Okay, like in terms of, like, the battle screen where you see...
Yeah, so I watched to see if there was anything on the battle screen that would indicate in that video that it was both male and female, but I've only seen female so far.
I get a feeling that it'll be both, probably, but you never know. That'll be something to find out and follow up with. So what I want to move on, unless you two have anything else to add to the idea of gender expression, or just some of my favorite examples of Pokemon that kind of defy the idea of gender norms, or, you know, non-traditional gender expression. And I actually wanted to start out, it's funny that you mentioned Sulker, the Machop, Machoke, and Machamp families, because I think it's really cool that female Machops, Machokes, and Machamps have, you know, really noticeable differences as far as their appearance. You know, just unlike some of the other fighting types, these ones can be male or female chance. There's a 33% chance to be female. And, you know, they have, of course, big muscles, and their names in English have macho. You know, that's very masculine coded, but, I mean, I think it's awesome. I would love to see a female Machamp, like you said, just wailing on some normal types, rocks types, steel types, and so on.
I wonder if the one in... Pokken Tournament. I wonder if that's a male or female.
I think it'd be whatever you want it to be. But, like, you know, the thing is, like, to be really crass, they could have put, like, a bikini over the female Machoke, but they didn't.
I am so happy they didn't.
That would have been weird. Another one that I really like is a male Goldeen, because, you know, Goldeen's very pretty, elegant, has luscious lips, beautiful eyes, flowing fins, but has a 50% chance to be either male or female. And so I'm just like, yes, queen. And the thing that's unfortunate about Sea King, despite being named Sea King, no matter if you have male or female, unfortunately, there's no Sea Queen. Honey is kind of ugly, so sorry about it.
How dare you? Let her live her truth.
Butch Queen, yeah. Something else I like is male Blossoms and Roselias and Roserods. You know, Blossom was added in Generation 2 as an alternate evolution of Gloom, but was not restricted to being female only. This is in spite of having flower bows and a petal skirt, which is, of course, a very similar aesthetic to what Roselia has. And then Roserade looks all ready to go to the Masquerade Ball and has a 50% chance of being male or female. So I think that's awesome. I love Blossom, you know, even though I go like Vileplume and always joke about Vileplume smelling like ass because it's based on the Rafflesia flower. I love Oddish, by the way. I've always loved Blossom, and I love these flowery dress Pokemons that can be male or female. Unfortunately, Lilligant is very similar, but can only be female. And I guess if you just think of the idea of flowers, Sunflora is kind of applicable here as well, but I don't think Sunflora's design is necessarily, despite being a flower, literally, super feminine, like, in the way that a Blossom is.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Like, a Sunflora is kind of just like, oh, it has its eyes closed and it's cute and smiling. I also really like Sunflora. I love grass types. Of course, there's the idea of a male Ralts, Kirlia, and Gardevoir. And, you know, we talked about the idea of Gallade getting his own separate evolution, or being a separate evolution, and, you know, not really having the skirt anymore. The Ralts family have a 50% chance to be male or female, and they're very elegant. They look like they're wearing dresses. They're very fancy, almost kind of ballerina-ish in a way. And, like, I love it. I mean, Gardevoir is probably one of my favorite Pokemon. And, you know, so a male Gardevoir, I'm like, yes, honey. The whole thing with Mime Jr. and Mr. Mime as well. You know, despite the name, even if that wasn't confusing, just the kind of the design of Mr. Mime specifically, being bald with, you know, the Groucho Marx hair, I guess, if you want to say, kind of looks more like a male clown. So, you know, even though Mr. Mime kind of creeps me out, like, anyway. But,
and doesn't Mr. Mime have an equal chance to be male or female?
Yeah, yeah. So, I think it's kind of funny that, you know, the naming scheme backfired on them. Because it's like, yes, female Mr. Mime, you kind of creepy, but do your thing. And then the last one I want to mention before I ask if you have any favorites is Gothita, Gothorita, and Gothitelle. I mean, first of all, the naming Ita and L, and that's funny because you said Chikorita in the same way. You know, the whole idea of Ita being a feminine, you know, naming aspect in languages such as Spanish. So that definitely suggests female. And also the Gothita line is based off of the elegant Gothic Lolita aesthetic in Japan. And so, you know, bows, lipstick, eyelashes, very femme, but a 25% chance to be male. So, I have to say, like, if I was going to put together, like, kind of a gender-defying team, I would think having a male Gothitelle would be, like, super fierce, and I kind of want to do that now because I'm like, yes, honey. And I think it's great that, you know, this exists, because, I mean, if it does show little boys out there who maybe are, like, pretty flowery things and bows and dresses, that they can have a male Gothitelle, or that a female Machamp can show a girl that she can be strong and be a bodybuilder or something. I may be reaching a little bit here, but, I mean, I think that the potential there is great. So do you have any favorite Pokemon that might be traditionally considered being male or female, but that, you know, when considered of as the unexpected gender, I guess you could say, or you know what I'm saying, like the idea of a male Blossom. Do you have any favorites here?
So something that I'm really disappointed that you didn't bring up is Wobbuffet.
Because,
as you may know, since I know you did your extensive research on this, that the only difference between male Wobbuffet and female Wobbuffet is that one of the two is wearing lipstick.
Yes.
And so I like to think that that's my fashion-forward henny that I'm going to have to use at some point.
Nice. What about you, Spike? Do you have any that, you know, may look manly or feminine, but you just really...
I was going to go Mr. Mime.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because just the fact that, like, for me, I feel like the Mr. Mimes I've caught have been female more often than not. So it's just really funny to me that they literally have Mr. in the name, IDK.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like, localized better, but, you know, it was the 90s. It was a different time, both in terms of, you know, gender identity and localization. This man are sick. If you don't have anything else to add, then I just really very briefly want to wrap this up with the idea of player characters. So, you know, there's the whole thing of, are you a boy or are you a girl? And it's kind of being like, you know, back in the day, LOL, because, you know, that was the way that the professor asked you which character you wanted. And so the really cool thing is that Crystal allowed you to choose a female playable character. But, I mean, it's like, are you a boy? Are you a girl? If you're a boy, here is, especially with XY, here is the boy's clothing shop or items. Here are the girl's clothing items. So the funny thing is that the most forward thinking about gender has been Pokemon Go, because they just said, which trainer looks like you, or select the trainer that, you know, most looks like you. It didn't say choose the male or the female trainer, which, I mean, it seems like a very minor thing, but for people in the LGBT community, especially people who are, you know, trans, who are genderqueer, gender non-binary, gender fluid, like, I think that's really a very easy to implement change in the language that really is more inclusive. I mean, you know, like, and this is like what the folks at GamerX talk about in their game Read Only Memories, which unfortunately is not a Poke clone, but still a great game. You know, they ask, what gender pronouns do you prefer? I mean, I don't think that, you know, especially a game made in Japan, designed, you know, to be largely for kids, but, you know, for everyone, I don't expect them to say what's your gender pronoun necessarily, but I mean, just the idea of choose your trainer, you know, and then just leaving it like that, or having clothing be open to whatever. You know, I'd really like to see that. So, with that, do you have any final thoughts about anything, any gender topics in Pokemon that you might want to touch on? I have one thought, but I'd like to hear yours.
Well,
first,
do we know yet if Sun and Moon will give us full selection of both clothing sets?
Not that we know of.
I would think that's probably highly not likely. I mean, just based on what we've seen in the past. But who knows? With Brionne, it could be a brave new world.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. I mean, I'd like to really look at player options moving forward. I would like to take a look at that once we know how things are going to look in Sun Moon.
Yeah, I want more, you know, gender diversity, more POCs in my games, and it looks like we're going to get a lot of that in this game, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we definitely have, in some of the latest videos, there was one about the... Trial Champions, or that's what they're called, right? Trial Champions?
I believe so.
And one of them looking kind of a very femme in a lot of ways. So I'm really excited to see that. So, you know, in their own way, Pokemon, I think, is trying. Something that I would think would be really cool is I feel like it's a certain type of crab or clam or something. And, like, I feel like I really should have done my research on real world animals. But, or like a turtle, it's some sort of animal that, like, based on the temperature, or it might be like turtle eggs or something, like, based on the temperature of sand they're in can determine whether they're male or female. But then there's also like some Pokemon, I'm sorry, not Pokemon, there's some real world animals that can change gender, or, you know, you have the idea of like male seahorses being the ones to carry the babies. So I think it would be really cool if there were like a Pokemon that changes gender based on, you know, certain battle conditions or something. Like, I think that there's a lot of potential here that's unexplored just in terms of the gender mechanics. Like I said, even without being like, oh, the gay type ability.
Oh, so I just to interrupt you real quick, so I wanted to go back to what you were saying about the trial captains. So as was announced in the same video that we just discussed previously about the new evolution types, or not types, but new evolutions in Alola, it was announced that Ilima would be the trial captain of normal types. And you are absolutely right. His aesthetic, or her aesthetic, is
very, I would say, effeminate. It has a very effeminate sensibility. Like, his or her hair is done up in a... I guess I should just say their hair.
Yeah.
Their hair is done up in such a way that it looks like there's, like, a cute little bow in it, and it's got this sweet little wave to it. However Alima identifies, I'm there for them.
Yeah, definitely. So, anything else you'd like to wrap up with? Any hopes for the future?
I would like to see gender, if they're going to, you know, continue having it, which I think they will. I don't know how necessarily think it is, but I would like them to, you know, just add more, like, variances. I guess I'd like to, if they're going to include it as a functionality in the game, like, just keep giving it meaning so that it actually has a value. Like, if you're going to have gender exist in your game, I think it should do something.
So more in the direction of, like, Meowstic, then?
Yes.
Excellent. All right, well, I believe that does it for now. Of course, if you have thoughts about this topic, or what you'd like to see, or your favorite mons that maybe are gender norm defying, please let us know. But for now, Spike is going to kick off our anime episodes, talking about XY episodes 17 through 19.
All right, we've got three episodes for you this week, 17, 18, and 19. That is A Rush of Ninja Wisdom, Awakening the Sleeping Giant, and A Conspiracy to Conquer. We'll start off, of course, with episode 17, A Rush of Ninja Wisdom.
Believe it!
Ash and his friends meet up with ninja trainer Sanpei, who owns a frogadier. Ash challenges Sanpei to a series of ninja training exercises. Froakie learns a new move. So this was an episode I thought was really fun. You know, it feels a little fillerish, even though I know the fact that Froakie learns a new move is going to be a big deal moving forward. But the thing that was really striking to me is that this was basically an episode of Naruto.
I mean, they basically could have called it, like, the hope of the region.
All right. You know, we have Froakie and Frogadier basically throwing Rasengans at each other, doing, like, Kage Bushin no Jutsu. I mean, it's straight up, like...
Ninja Vanish. They even did, like, a replacement technique moment with Frogadier.
Right? It was a lot of fun, though. I you know, call it a little bit of a filler episode, but it also had stuff like Pikachu and Dedenne dressing up as cute little ninjas.
And Bonnie.
And Bonnie, yes. And, you know, they all looked super cute. Overall, I liked it as an episode. I thought it was a lot of fun, even if ultimately I feel like it didn't necessarily have a huge impact on the ongoing story.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't know that I believe that, because we've got they hinted that Sanpei has two brothers, one of whom has a Venusaur, which could easily evolve into a Mega Venusaur, and a Greninja.
Oh yeah, their names were Ipe, Nipe, and Sanpei, and the characters in the show all had a good chuckle out of it, and yeah. It's like, this joke didn't translate, because they're laughing over the fact that they're actually, like, 1, 2, and 3.
That actually was my biggest gripe, is that, you know, Pokemon
Company
is... Well,
I mean, make up your mind. How many times have I heard you complain about them localizing Jelly Donuts?
Jelly Donuts, but I mean, like, I just feel like, you know...
Like, do you want it translated, or do you want it localized? Pick one. I've heard you complain about both.
I just think that, you know, there's a certain balance between it, and I think that, you know, there's times when localization is unnecessary, Jelly Donuts. But I think, you know, the Ichi-ni-san joke didn't work in English, so...
Right, so what would you prefer they did for them laughing? Like, her be like, oh, my brother's name is 1, my other brother's name is 2, and I am 3.
Yeah, I don't know, I don't have a good solution, but I was just...
3P, 1P, and 2P?
I'm gonna name my first child 2P.
So,
I don't have a solution for it, but I mean, it was a cute episode. I loved the Bonnie, Dedenne, and Pikachu cutaways, and, you know, I thought that my disappointment was that, Froakie didn't evolve into Frogadier. I thought they were definitely hinting at that.
I will agree there. I had also expected the, evolution here, and I was surprised we didn't get it, and disappointed.
See, I will say that I am not a fan of him evolving right now, because I love Froakie. I think Froakie is a cute little guy, and for where they are in the series, they need to have cute little guys. Like, last week we thought that Chespin was going to evolve, and I'm glad that he didn't. I like that they're learning new moves, and I think we'll probably get a Fennekin focus pretty soon.
That's awesome. I really hope that comes to pass. And that is a good point, because I do love Froakie. Super, super cute. I think Frogadier is like the derp of the line, because obviously Greninja is super awesome. My hope is that Froakie only spends like one episode episode is Frogadier. Like,
kind of like in the same way
Charmeleon super, super
evolved
cute.
Super fast in Charizard.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just be super cute for as long as possible, and then just have your awkward puberty phase last, like, two episodes.
Yeah, like, the second evolutions I always think of, like, Charmeleons and Wartortles and Ivysaurs being, like, the awkward adolescents.
I mean, isn't that the point, though?
Is it? Because I would believe it.
I mean, I thought believe it was. That's it. How I've always felt about it.
All right, so the next episode, 18, Awakening the Sleeping Giant, in Camp Friere Town, Ash and his friends come across a Snorlax blocking their path. The local king, Shabanoe, has a poke flute that will wake it, but it was stolen by the selfish Princess Ali of Parfum Palace.
Shabanoe, she better don't.
Ash tries to retrieve it, but the princess demands a Pokemon battle.
Well, okay, and let's talk about that Pokemon battle. So, for those of you who haven't watched this episode, we very quickly get a setup. There's a Snorlax sleeping in this town, and it's there because it likes to help this village. Oh, but it can't wake up because Lord Shabanoe has to play this flute. So they go up to him and like, hey, Lord Shabanoe, wake up this Snorlax. And he's like, nah, I can't. I'm allergic because it looks like the D, and I don't want to put that in my mouth. I get hives when I throw this away. And then we find out about the stealing, and when they go to confront this little woman named Allie, we'll say that she was basically trying to trick and trap them as far as, like, collecting Pikachu to, like, be her friend, and then ends up basically taking Clement to be her lawfully wedded husband.
I don't think there was anything lawful about it.
Yeah.
I really struggled with this episode.
There's a lot of awful about it.
I really struggled with this episode because I found Princess Allie to be so deeply irritating.
That's the point.
You know, I recognize that it was the point, but, like, they went too far. It was, for me, actually, like, unpleasant to watch this episode. It was actually, like, fouling my mood a little bit because I found it so irritating. Yeah, this is the kind of storyline that, like, if it happened in the game, I would make sure to bring up my biggest pokies to just destroy everything.
You know, and the funny thing is that the Parfum Palace and Lord Shabanoe, I don't remember if it was exactly Lord Shabanoe himself, but this loosely ties into some elements from the game. So I was a little disappointed that it didn't more closely because I thought that there was like a prince and he was kind of handsome-ish looking. Lord Shabanoe was kind of like, but I did think like, oh, the Parfum Palace and the fireworks. I thought that was cute. And maybe I'm misremembering it, but I don't remember a Princess Allie.
So my highlights for Rush of Ninja Wisdom last episode, like literally I have listed, it's basically an episode of Naruto and Ninja Pikachu. I have none for Awakening the Sleeping Giant. I didn't like this episode, and I was happy when it was over.
Wow. I really liked the Snorlax elements. I thought Snorlax was super
Snorlax
cute.
Is adorable. There was a really, really great sequence about Snorlax's backstory that was presented in an animation style reminiscent to the Deathly Hallows sequence of the Harry Potter films. I thought that was really well executed and well implemented, but because it was in this episode, which I found deeply irritating, I couldn't really enjoy it as much as I would have liked to.
You didn't even love it when Jesse tried to play the poke flute and it was like terrible?
No, it just reminded me of hanging out with you.
That's a read.
Moving on.
Last, but not least, because least was Awakening the Sleeping Giant, we have episode 19, A Conspiracy to Conquer. Team Rocket gets brainwashed by the mysterious Madam X and her Malamar. Only Meowth is able to escape. Meowth goes to Ash and his friends for help. When Pikachu is captured and brainwashed as well, Ash, Serena, Clement, Bonnie, and Meowth go to save him and Team Rocket. However, everyone but Ash and Meowth gets brainwashed. This leaves them with no idea on how to stop Madam X. I thought this was a better episode. I could not help but cackle every time Malamar was on
Malamar!
Screen. Malamar! Because he said his name in such a stupid way that it was just like, you're so dumb right now.
I want to hear your best Malamar impression.
No, I'd prefer not to.
Sulker, indulge us.
Why would I do anything that would make you happy?
Malamar!
Besides, you've got us covered in obnoxiousness, so there you go.
Ooh, girl. No, but seriously, I thought this was a good episode, certainly better than episode 18. The struggle for me was kind of that it was nice to see a different dynamic rather than just Ash and Pikachu, which is the super norm. We had Ash working with Meowth for most of the episode, and it was actually a refreshing change of pace. I love Pikachu, but man, episodes like this make me feel like I would really like a block of episodes where Pikachu is off having his own adventures and Ash relies on like a B-tier Pokemon for a while.
So what I really enjoyed about this episode is that it was basically Pokemon the zombie brainwashing episode. And, you know, I think that was, like, it was kind of legitimately horrifying that this Pokemon just decided, because for those of you who didn't watch it, it ends up that Malamar basically brainwashed an Officer Jenny, to be Madam X so that it could carry out its plot of taking over the world with some mysterious weapon that we never really get the full details on. And I think that that's horrifying. Like, the idea that they were all basically non-conned into doing its bidding when Pokemon are often considered just the tools of other people. Like, throughout the series and the games and the TV show, we see, like, Team Rocket, Team Flare, and Magma and Aqua all doing these things with Pokemon because they believe that they have the say-all, end-all on how Pokemon should be used. And then you get this Malamar who's like, nope, I'm in charge and I'm gonna break things down.
What about you, Slaggy? What did you think of A Conspiracy to
Conquer?
It was a
very weird episode. You know, just the idea of, like, being psychicked away into an abandoned power plant and stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's a darker one.
It was kind of dark. It was, like, very weird, but I kind of also liked it. And honestly, I feel like that it was hinting at some plot devices, you know, like, that we saw in the X and Y games with the, you know, the whole idea of an ultimate weapon. Even the, like, room where the ultimate weapon was that Malamar ended up having to destroy because now they knew about the weapon. Like, made me think of the sequence where you have to go to, you know, get Yveltal or Xerneas.
Oh, interesting.
I feel like, wasn't that right outside of Camphier Town in the games as well?
I don't recall.
It's been a while since I've been at that point in the games, but, you know, like, there's, like, kind of, like, these, like, red, twisted vine vein things. It was just, like, very Lord Frieza, weirdish Dragon Ball, Namek, I don't know, sort of thing. And it was just, like, as weird as it might have been, like, I really feel like it potentially set up a huge plot point for later. And again, like you said, like, I appreciated it because, honestly, I'm getting a little bit tired. And, like, you know, with the two previous episodes, oh, Team Rocket's gonna do something. Ash and Pikachu, stop it. Team Rocket's blasting off again. I mean, I love Jesse and James and Meowth. I mean,
let me pause you real quick. You have watched the Pokemon anime before, right? You do understand that that's the plot. That's the whole show.
I know, and I'm saying after, like, what, is this the 17th season? I can't even keep track. I'm getting a little bit tired of it. Every episode. I mean, not every episode, but, you know.
I will say, I would like, and so I sort of touched on a similar theme here. I would like to see things get mixed up a little more frequently. Obviously, I think Team Rocket, Jesse and James are a big part of the show, but I don't think it would be a bad thing to have a few more occasional episodes that just don't involve them. That's all.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that Sun and Moon, you know, with the whole idea of Ash going to school and stuff, I hope that really mixes it up. But overall, I'd say it was an all right episode. I don't think any of these three were my favorite necessarily, but I don't know. I mean, I'm just really itching for another gym battle. I think it just can be kind of tough when there's anime that has so much filler. And I mean, some filler can be great, don't get me wrong, but, you know, a show like Pokemon, which has as many episodes as it does per season, you know, there's lots of filler. And so, I mean, I've gotten to the point where I really want story. So I'm kind of eager for, you know.
If that's the case, well, let's jump into our next little segment here. As you listeners know, we usually talk about 4 episodes of Pokemon X and Y per episode. Last episode, we discussed that we were going to be introducing a partial new segment, Pokemon Generations. For those of you not familiar, Pokemon Generations is a series of internet shorts done by the Pokemon YouTube channel. They are each, like, 5-minute vignettes into the world of the Pokemon series as far as, like, the actual games go, giving us kind of a in-depth perspective. Each of these episodes, I feel, has more to say about the Pokemon world than any particular episode of X and Y, for instance, or the ongoing anime in general. So today we'd like to discuss episodes 1, The Adventure, and episode 2, The Chase. You can find these over on YouTube, or you can find them posted to our Tumblr or Twitter whenever they're released. In episode 1, The Adventure, a Pokemon trainer named Red catches a wild Pikachu, making the start of a long adventure spanning many regions. In this, we get to see the moment in which it starts off with what looks like the loading screen to Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow, and jumping into Viridian Forest, where the trainer, Red, catches a Pikachu. It then transitions from the sprite animations into the actual anime esque world, where we get to see Red use his Pikachu across all of the various regions that the games have covered so far. In this, you'll see legendary Pokemon fighting with the Pikachu, getting some of our some of our more memorable locations built in. Did you guys have any thoughts on this particular episode? I was personally a huge fan of it.
You know, my problem is I did like it. I thought it was like a really good introduction to Pokemon 101 for people who maybe have sort of fallen off the wagon and are just interested in getting back into the Pokeship in advance of Sun Moon, with, you know, PokeGo really still a big deal when Generation started or was announced. But for me, it was just kind of like, if I'm only going to get like every week, like a 3 to 5 minute clip, I don't want it to be a 3 to 5 minute clip show effectively. Like, it basically played to me like a greatest hits of Pokemon Origins, but we just watched that, especially here on this show, we just watched that like a month ago. So for me, it just felt like a repeat too soon, almost.
I was glad that that week that we got episodes 1 and 2, because it felt kind of more like opening credits, honestly.
I would agree with you there. It's very much like, this is what you can expect from the series.
I thought it was really cute, but, I didn't get a lot out of it for the similar reasons as you guys said.
Fair enough. Let's jump over to episode 2, The Chase.
I was just going to say, and I liked episode 2 a fair bit.
Okay, episode 2 is titled The Chase. Detective Looker leads a unit to infiltrate the Viridian City Gym in order to capture Team Rocket's leader, Giovanni. In this episode, we get to see what looks like effectively a Pokemon task force attacking the gym after they discover that Giovanni has lost recently to 2 trainers out of that gym. We can assume that these trainers are Red and Blue, though we are never given full confirmation. We get to see some really great practical uses of Pokemon in this episode. We see a Machamp punching down a wall to create an entry point for the SWAT team. We see a Magnemite being used in order to unlock the magnetic locks to the door, which we know are in the game because the doors are locked until Giovanni returns to the gym. And, we get to see the best Pokemon of them all, Arcanine, fire blasting down a wall. Obviously, he gets to the gym a little too late. We find that Giovanni has gone on the lam, as it was, and the episode kind of ends there on a cliffhanger with Detective Looker trying to decide what his next steps in hunting down Team Rocket will be. I really loved this episode, as for all of the reasons I just described. What do you think about it, Spike?
You know, I actually like this one a lot, and this episode actually made me disappointed to see that Generations is only going to be like a 18-episode series. Getting these kinds of like side stories and world building exercises to me actually has tremendous value to the entire Pokemon franchise, sort of giving us these bigger picture ideas of how the world would integrate Pokemon into sort of the way that things work in our world. To me is actually really, really fascinating and something we don't get enough of in the core Pokemon series, either games or anime. So this to me actually legitimizes the concept of what they're doing with these shorts. It just makes me wish that they were just going to be a thing ongoing indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Slykick?
I really liked it. I mean, this one, compared to some of the ones we've had in the following week since then, felt a little bit like a deleted scene from Pokemon Origins. But I liked it. I mean, Detective Looker was kind of a looker.
She thirst.
Shock. Surprise.
Oh, is that it?
Yep.
All right. Well, I do want to point out, as Slykick had mentioned to Sulker and I before we began recording today, the Pokemon Sun and Moon anime will be starting in November, of specifically the 17th. That is, of course, the Japanese broadcast. And we have decided that, assuming a fan-subbing group takes up the Sun and Moon anime, we will begin discussing episodes the week after they air here on the show. So please look forward to that. We're gonna, just for a little while, be doing X and Y, Generations, and Sun and Moon anime moving forward.
Fantastic.
Please look forward to it. Anyway, Sulker, I believe you have our next segment for us.
Yeah, Pokemon of the Week. This week's Pokemon, as described on our Twitter, is Snorlax. Snorlax, the sleeping Pokemon, is a normal type. Its original Pokedex entry lists very lazy, just eats and sleeps as its rotund bulk builds.
Are you talking about me?
It becomes steadily more slothful. No, because you are already the most slothful.
Ha ha ha.
This Snorlax Snorlax evolves from Munchlax when leveled up with a high friendship level. In Generations 1 and 2 and their remakes, wild Snorlax can be found sleeping in inconvenient locations throughout the Kanto region. In order to catch one, the trainer must first obtain a magical, must attain it with music from either a Pokeflute or the Pokegear set to the Pokeflute channel. A sleeping Snorlax makes a return in Pokemon X and Y, in which it blocks the player on its way to Route 7.
Notable. And then you have to have a battle with a bratty princess, and she takes your brother.
Notable anime appearances: Ash's Snorlax. In Snack Attack, a Snorlax was eating the grapefruits of the Grapefruit Islands. Ash manages to capture it near the end of the episode. After the adventures in the Orange Islands, Ash's Snorlax spends most of its time in Professor Oak's labs, along with every other Pokemon he's ever caught outside of any region.
And soon
those
his
poor
ninja.
Pokies.
Snorlax first appears in Wake Up, Snorlax! This Snorlax was blocking the water flow to a small village. Snorlax also appeared in Pikachu's Rescue Adventure, helping hold on to the nest containing some Execute and Togepi. A Snorlax also appears in the Pikachu short, Pikachu and Pichu, as part of the Pichu Brothers posse. It also appeared in other episodes of the Pokemon Chronicles and made a cameo appearance in Giratina and the Sky Warrior, along with the Pichu Brothers and their friends. Multiple alternately colored Snorlax appear in Snorlax Snowman. These Snorlax were adapted to the more frigid climates and were seen in the episode. One in particular was befriended by Pikachu and his friends.
That's practically like the prelude to Alolan forms right there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't mention Awakening the Sleeping Giant.
I didn't think it bared repeating.
It doesn't. Slaggy, I believe we had some feedback this week. Would you like to get on top of that?
Yeah, so in addition to our Pokemon of the Week being Snorlax, we said on our link cables, Brion Black blah, blah, blah. Brion Backlash has inspired us to talk about gender diversity and expression in Pokemon. Got any non-traditionally gender-coded favorites? We have White Wing says male Clefairy, male Gardevoir, female Machamp. I love my male Roserade, so fancy and awesome.
Yes.
Urenzyme initially tweeting, gonna have to wait and hear what this backlash was before I can weigh in. We linked over to the Kotaku article that reported about the Brion backlash, and your enzyme said those comments are the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Why would this upset anyone?
And I believe you responded with masculinity so fragile.
Yep. And then in response to our Pokemon of the Week, Prince Zexu said Snorlax, in regard to Snorlax, he's a great mon. Strong defense, good curse user. Love my cat blob. Oh, he
cat
really is
blob.
A cat blob.
Right? All right. Well, with all that having been said, I think it's time for our outgoing solicitations. Slaggy?
I feel like we should eventually turn this into like our Poke Wrap, but we need time for that. So
I don't hate that idea, but let's get this wrapped up.
iTunes, Google Play, subscription-rated reviews, Facebook likes, and fucking love Twitter, Tumblr, email, stabcast.org. Sorry.
Remarkably, that is not the worst thing I've ever heard.
We have different levels of what the worst things ever
heard
are.
Of course, we love interacting with you. We're available on iTunes, Google Play, and we love your subscriptions, ratings, reviews, streams, etc. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter, and we like to tumble down Tumblr. You can email us at mail@stabcast.org.
mail@stabcast.org.
And our home base is stabcast.org.
Stabcast.org.
I'm just going to do my shout outs.
Yeah, I was going to try to be like, gotta shout him out, gotta shout him out. Oh, gotta shout him out, gotta shout him out.
No. All right, so as ever and always, I want to point you in the direction of the Voice of Geeks Network over at vognetwork.com, where you can listen to shows like PokeStop. Join podcasting veterans Rob Roberts and Shane Alenko for a regular chat on Pokemon topics like the handheld games, Pokemon Go, and spin-offs of the franchise. You can also hear Slagkick and I over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Which you can obviously also find at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
We are your left-of-center, twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. You can also hear the Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season version of the Japanese Super Sentai show upon which it's based.
Double to Sentai, Zoroger!
Slack, I need to catch what up about
on,
you?
I need to catch up on Zoroger, by the way. If you are into femme queens like Mahanti Jinx Monsoon, then you should check out Readings Fundamental, the podcast for myself, Spike Delvin from VG Realness, and Rob Roberts serve tea and dish on everything RuPaul's Drag Race, Hanti. And All Stars 2 just finished up, and not to spoil it, but an Arbok won the competition. If you follow Drag Race, you know what I'm saying. Sorry if it's spoilers, but you've probably already been spoiled. Sorry about it. So we'll be wrapping up the season there, and then going on hiatus until season 9. I'd also like to shout out to Orange Lounge Radio, or OLR for short, where every gamer has a voice. And it's the longest running video game radio show on the internet. We owe so much to them. And it's funny because I always think of Orange Islands when I think of Orange Lounge Radio. Sulker.
It's super effective. PKMN Cast, a Pokemon website for news and reviews that explore the ins and outs of the Pokemon franchise, covering the games, anime, and beyond. All this and a weekly podcast. Mythical, Mazes and Magikarps, taking two of the best aspects of geek life. GM Whitewing hosts a troop of unlikely heroes as they explore the Pokemon world of the past with classic D&D classes and villains. I'd also like to shout out to Extra Life, a fundraising foundation that once a year runs a 24-hour marathon of gaming to provide assistance for the Children's Miracle Network of Hospitals. This will be my fourth year participating in the fundraising campaign, and you can donate to us over at stabcast.org. You'll find a link for it.
Stabcast.org is where you will find a link for it.
Slidekick, I believe we have music?
We do. It's great. We got music, we got a theme song, and it's great stuff. We'd like to thank the wonderful Nate Wants to Battle, also actually known as Nathan Sharp. He does all sorts of fantastic anime, video game, musical covers and parodies and all sorts of awesome content. So go check him out. He's just a really talented guy, and so we are thrilled to have his music be our theme.
All right. Well, with all that having been said, it is time for you all to go home, so to speak. Thank you so much for spending this lovely Sunday evening with us. We really, really appreciate you and your time. Until next time, keep catching, keep training, and...
Keromatsu, Tai, Gekogashira, Ninja Batoru!
If Munchlax and Snorlax had a further evolution, and you know, Snorlax is going to sleep after eating so much, I think its name would have to be Exlax.
I like tiny Pokemon. Big ones are too scary.
Xander, talk in your mic.
Mike, I'm talking into you.
Slagkick, talk in your mic.
Mike, I'm talking into your butthole.